Hello, my friends. It's Wednesday, March 26, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. We've got an amazing show for you today because the whiskey leaks have leaked. Jeffrey Goldberg from The Atlantic has called the bluff of the Trump maladministration and released the leaks, released the Signal chat that was used to bomb Yemen and included the Atlantic reporter, unbeknownst to the Secretary of Defense, the Vice President, the Director of National Intelligence, the CIA Director, etc., etc. We've got so much to unpack for that, so we'll get to that right after our first break. But I also have some other stories that have kind of bubbled under the radar for you. RFK Jr., the head of Health and Human Services, mark your calendars, folks. He has proposed something I 100% support. I absolutely, totally agree with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. But hold on. Don't worry. There's still some bad RFK Jr. news as well from Texas to share with you. So it's not like he's out of the doghouse yet. Also coming up on the show today, great news coming out of central Pennsylvania, out of Amish country, where a Democrat has flipped the Pennsylvania State Senate. We'll tell you how he was able to do so in a Trump plus 17 district. Then we'll get to our Idaho update in Boycott, Idaho. Some news on the Everyone is Welcome celebration that took place to support the West Ada teacher and the sign that was deemed controversial for violating the state's anti-DEI policies. Also, Governor Ron DeSantis visited Idaho. We'll tell you why. And to wind up the show, we're going to take a look at the forthcoming elections in 26 and 28 and whether or not we will have them at all. Trump has been very busy trying to do everything he can to thwart the will of the voters. But before we get to the entire show, I have some personal, not news, I guess it's just a personal anecdote that happened to me yesterday. First time this sort of thing has happened, so I was kind of shocked. So I'm a hobbyist podcaster, as you know. I don't do ads or any of that kind of shilling. This is just fun and therapy for me. Which means that I need to support myself somehow. I have to be useful to capitalism in some way. So I do so by running the gig apps. You know, it's got the freedom of setting my schedule whenever I want and so forth. So I do Uber and the DoorDash and the Instacart. And I'm out yesterday morning doing Instacart early in the morning. It's got to be, you know, eight in the morning. And so the store is usually pretty empty at that time. And I'm in the store in the produce section. I've got my mask on because, you know, Robert F. Kennedy is in charge of health these days. So I've got my mask on and I'm wandering through the aisles and there's this young man comes kind of toward me and he's pushing a cart as well. And he locks eyes with me and he says, "You know, you look like a Democrat with that mask on." And I was kind of shocked and immediately replied, "Yeah, and you look like an asshole." And he replied, "Yeah, I am an asshole." And then wandered off. It's just, I was just kind of shocked at this. It's like, first of all, who the hell are you stepping up to someone 30 years your senior and making any comments on their appearance whatsoever? But you look like a Democrat? I mean, that's kind of telling, isn't it? That this has been so politicized that someone who wants to protect their health from airborne viruses must be liberal, must be progressive, must be a Democrat. That's how bad it's become here. And this guy just represents one of many people out there who have never had the opportunity of having been punched in the mouth. And he's very lucky it was at work because that was my next instinct. I'm telling you, these young men, we talked about it yesterday on the show, the Generation Z, so conservatively red-pilled, so MAGA. I don't know what we're going to do to bring them back into the fold, but it's something we're going to have to pay attention to. The big story today is the follow-up on the amazing breach of national security that was fostered by Pete Hegseth and the other national security advisors who are using an encrypted app called Signal, and using this off-the-shelf app on their personal phones to conduct war business, to conduct the business of dropping bombs on Yemen. And I believe it was Pete Hegseth, our Secretary of Defense, who indicated we'd only be having the best and brightest now that we're getting rid of DEI.
My assessment is the DOD will be merit-based and colorblind. You will be judged based on how good you are at your job. Full stop. That's it.
That's right. Merit-based and colorblind, according to Pete Hegseth. We're going to be merit-based. This is why we got rid of the four-star general who was one of the most qualified Secretary of Defenses ever and replaced him with a Fox News host, because it's merit-based and colorblind. We got rid of the black guy who is incredibly competent, and we put Pete Hegseth, a white guy, in his place. Merit-based and colorblind. And I just love the memes that have been coming out about these this Signal chat leak. My favorite was the lyrics. He drinks a whiskey drink. He drinks a vodka drink. He drinks a lager drink. He drinks a cider drink. He texts the plans to talk about the war plans. He texts the plans to talk about the war crimes. That's Pete Hegseth in a nutshell. So I'm older here. I can remember, you remember back during the Iraq war when Geraldo Rivera was on Fox, he's there in Iraq and he draws a couple of diagrams on in the sand, like a kid in the sand lot trying to diagram a football play. And you remember when that was considered a huge breach of decorum and a huge breach of intelligence and security? Yeah, talk about the good old days. Here we've got these guys discussing classified war plans on Signal. And of course, the news that's coming out after this, we've had some hearings. Senators have been grilling Tulsi Gabbard and John Ratcliffe, the head of the CIA. And the answers they've been given are definitely going to put them in some territory of committing perjury. Definite lies going on here. Let's see if we can run down some of this, some of the sets here. First of all, there was a directive that went out Pentagon-wide just a week ago. And in this directive, they said, do not use the Signal app. Do not use the Signal app because a potential vulnerability has been found. And here's the thing. People think about Signal, and if you know something about it, it's encrypted end-to-end. Right. So that means I'm on my phone. I send a message to you. And as that message is traveling through the ether, through the internet, through the Wi-Fi, whatever, it's encrypted. And then you on the other end have the key to open it. Right. So as it's flying through the air, if someone hacks it or gets that signal, pardon the pun, they can't read what's in it because it's all scrambled. They can only read it on your phone. Your phone is the only phone that can read it because it's got the key to unscramble it, right? So I think people out there that are hearing about this that don't know a lot about messaging are thinking, well, okay, so maybe it's bad that they were using Signal, but at least it's encrypted, at least it's secret, at least, you know, the Russians couldn't spy on that. Wrong. Because while the software is encrypted, the hardware that it's on is not. The phone that you're using, and in the case of these people, they were using their personal private phones. They are not secured phones. And so what that means is that you can spoof someone's phone. I can make like a clone of your phone that has the same, you know, SIM card and so forth, so that when those signals fly through the air, they fly not just to your phone, but also to my fake phone that I've spoofed. And I can read everything that's coming through your phone in real time, even though you think it's encrypted. And this is why it makes it so devastating that we found out that Witkoff, the Ukraine envoy of Trump's, was not only in Moscow at the time, he was in the Kremlin at the time he was added to this group chat. Now, do you think that the Russians might have the ability to spoof someone's phone if it's on their cell networks or it's on their Wi-Fis? Vladimir Putin probably knew exactly what was going on in real time as we were discussing classified war plans on Signal. Now, Waltz, is Mike Waltz, one of the security advisors for Trump, has taken the full blame. He says, it's all my fault. I accidentally added him to the chat, but this guy sucks. Goldberg sucks. He's a terrible reporter. He hates Trump. He's just out to get Trump. He's a hack. He's just a witch hunt. They're trying to smear the journalist. And the bet, it seems to be, from the Trump administration was that since this is top secret stuff, he wouldn't release it. We heard Tulsi Gabbard up on the hearings saying that these are secret plans. They're not top secret. No, nothing top secret was discussed. And so the senators ask her, okay, well, then let's release all the chat. Well, we can't release the chat because it's secret, but it's not top secret. It's the secret that's not secret, apparently. And Pete Hegseth was saying the same thing, that no war plans were being discussed.
Nobody's texting war plans. I know exactly what I'm doing, exactly what we're directing, and I'm really proud of what we accomplished.
That was even backed up by the White House press secretary, Carolyn Leavitt. Here's her official tweet on this from the press secretary account. Jeffrey Goldberg is well known for his sensationalist spin. Here are the facts about his latest story. No war plans were discussed. No classified material was sent to the thread. The White House counsel's office has provided guidance on a number of different platforms for President Trump's top officials to communicate as safely and efficiently as possible. As the National Security Council stated, the White House is looking into how Goldberg's number was inadvertently added to the thread. Now, I have my theory as to why his number was inadvertently added. My theory is that they intended to add a journalist to the thread, just not one from this country. My theory is that somewhere in Waltz's phone, he's got a list of journalists, and the journalist he wanted's name was probably alphabetically close to Jeffrey Goldberg. That's my theory. I would start looking at Russian journalists with a last name that starts with a G. That's what I would start doing. And of course, up on the Hill, being questioned by the senators, Tulsi Gabbard and John Ratcliffe can't remember a damn thing.
Was there any mention, Ms. Gabbard, of a weapon or weapons system?
I don't recall specific weapons systems being named.
I don't recall. How about anything about timing?
I don't recall specific timing.
Any mention of any military unit whatsoever?
Not that I recall.
Ms. Gabbard?
Not that I recall.
The discussion included the vice president's private opinion on the wisdom of proposed U.S. strikes in Yemen, correct?
I don't recall.
It included the private opinions of the Secretary of Defense on the timing of strikes in Yemen, correct?
I don't recall.
So as this went through yesterday, and went through the news cycle yesterday, people are commenting on this on social media because the administration keeps saying, well, there's nothing secret here. There was no secret plans discussed. There was no war plans discussed. There was no timing discussed. They were trying to bluff Jeffrey Goldberg. They were trying to appeal to the fact that he knew, Goldberg, knew that this was secret stuff going on and that releasing it would be betraying national security interests. So people online kept saying, well, look, Jeffrey, if they keep saying it's not secret, it's not secret. You can't be more Catholic than the Pope. If the president and his advisors are saying it's not secret, who are you to say it's secret? And sure enough, this morning in the Atlantic, Jeffrey Goldberg released almost all of the text. Not quite all of it. You know why? Because part of that text also included the outing of a covert CIA operative, a woman working for the CIA, covertly a spy, outed in this group text. And of course, Goldberg isn't going to out her. And makes me wonder what Valerie Plame might think about all of this. You remember her from the Bush years? She was outed by Scooter Libby. Republicans just don't seem to have much concern or care about the security and safety of our nation's spies, do they? So the texts have been released, and of course, they were all lying. Here's just a bit from that text from Pete Hegseth, the one who was saying that no war plans were discussed. No, No, we didn't discuss war plans. What we did discuss is time now, 11:44 Eastern Time. Weather is favorable. Just confirmed with CENTCOM. We are go for mission launch. 12:15 Eastern Time, F-18's launch, first strike package. 13:45, trigger-based, F-18 first strike window starts. Target terrorist is at his known location, so should be on time. Also, strike drones launch, MQ-9s. 14:10, more F-18s launch, second strike package. 14:15, strike drones on target. This is when the first bombs will definitely drop, pending earlier trigger-based targets. 15:36, F-18 second strike starts. Also, first sea-based Tomahawks included. No war plans were discussed. We weren't discussing war plans. We were, it was a role-playing game. Yeah, that's it. That's the ticket. If this isn't war plans, saying when F-18s are going to be launching and striking, and known terrorist targets are in place, I don't know what war plans are. Another thing that's annoying, troubling, concerning about this is in discussing these chats, Mike Waltz says, as we discussed on the other PC, the other private chat? You mean there's more of these private signal chats? And that's really the controversy we should be looking into here. This is the one time they messed up and accidentally included a reporter to report on this stuff. How much more have they been doing it? Because here's another thing about Signal, if you guys don't know. Those messages in Signal can be programmed to self-destruct, like the old Mission Impossible. This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Except in this case, it's the digital data that is erased. And in this chat, at the very top of it, in the beginning, when Jeffrey Goldberg was added, it says, Mike Waltz added you to this chat. Message deletion time 1 week. So not only are these guys conducting top secret war plans over a text messaging app, they're programming all record of it to be deleted within a week. That's what the scandal is here. The scandal here is they are conducting government business over text messaging apps that do not comply with record keeping requirements. No Freedom of Information Act requests, no subpoenas, no data to be presented to any court in the future for courts-martial or trials. And this was something that was recommended in Project 2025. It's not like they just came up with this out of thin air. Project 2025 suggested conducting business on these kind of apps, specifically to avoid the scrutiny of federal record-keeping. Another little bit in the text is a back-and-forth between J.D. Vance and Pete Hegseth, loathing the European freeloading. Yeah, the European freeloading. Again, referring back to us and our alliances with Europe and our military keeping that strait open near Yemen and Djibouti to keep the flow of European ships through that strait, because that's mostly who is using it. They're shipping out of Europe through the Mediterranean Sea, through the Suez Canal, and down through that strait that the Houthis keep bombing. European freeloading. Well, that's working out wonderfully as the Europeans now turn away from all the U.S. defense contractors, canceling their F-35 purchases and beginning to spend more on their own defense. And in a sense, I can see how the Trump people would see, this is what we wanted. We want them to pay more for their defense. But in doing so, we are alienating them and placing ourselves on an island. We are isolating ourselves on the world stage. Another thing in this text I want to bring up. Between J.D. Vance and Mike Waltz, in the text says, typing too fast, the first target, their top missile guy, we had positive ID of him walking into his girlfriend's building, and now it's collapsed. So, again, the scandal is huge that they're covering up, you know, these secret war plans. But, you know, really at the bottom of it, there's another shock. And that is this indiscriminate bombing that we're doing in the people of Yemen. We're going to just collapse an entire building and kill all the people in it, who very well could be innocent people, for one guy. Go after one guy. Gee, why do they hate us so in the Middle East? 53 people are dead. At least 5 kids are dead in these bombings. That ought to be some bit of shock as well, you would think. Final bit of update on this WikiLeaks. Fox News has benched its national security reporter. Her name's Jennifer Griffin. Long time, decades of experience for this woman. But they're not having her on the air to discuss this. She'd be the natural person to discuss it on the air. But on social media, she's been honest about it. She's been pointing out that anybody of lesser rank, I mean, even generals who do this kind of stuff would be immediately arrested, their phones and their computers seized, facing courts martial. And these guys are still out walking around lying about it, trying to blame Goldberg for somehow sneaking on. That was the other fun excuse they were giving. That somehow Goldberg snuck on to this chat. Somehow he hacked his way in. Okay, well, if that's your defense, then chatting on that app seems even dumber, doesn't it? If someone who's a reporter can just wiggle his way in? We have facilities for this. We have SCIF, Secure Compartmentalized Information Facilities. And the other thing to notice about this was another revelation. I guess it wasn't the last thing. Another revelation on this is how Hegseth was putting out all this detail that I just read you, you know, the 1435, F-18 strike now, this, that, and the other thing, right? Did he type all that? Because that's a lot of detail, especially on your phone, to be typing with your thumbs and not have misspellings or anything like that. The theory here is that he was copying and pasting it. Copying and pasting it from his phone or his laptop. Which means, not only are they chatting about the war plans back and forth on unsecured devices, Hegseth at least has copies of those plans on his unsecured devices to copy and paste from. Because your secure devices that you get from the government that have been, you know, hardened, locked down, government devices don't have copy and paste functions. There is no control C, control V on a government phone or a government laptop. Furthermore, you can't do screenshots either. Those kind of things are disabled for obvious security reasons. So in any sane world, this would be the end of the career of Pete Hegseth. He would have resigned by now. Gabbard resigned. Waltz resigned. Witkoff resigned. But we aren't living in normal times. This would be the death of anyone else's career. But in Trump world, this is just another excuse to fight. It's just another excuse to fight, another excuse to say, fuck you, make me. And to their credit, Democrats are doing their best to make them. I've gone off many times about how Democrats need to stop asking questions and start making accusations and holding feet to the fire. And sure enough, they are. They are calling for resignations and they are holding hearings. Or the hearings that are being held, they're able to, you know, ask questions at them because they're not in the majority. They're not calling these hearings. You get my point. They are holding these people accountable. But where are the national security Republicans? You would think if anything was going to get them to break from Trump and MAGA world, these Republicans who all my life have been all about the national security, where are they? I'm waiting for the first Republican to call on Pete Hegseth to resign, to call on Tulsi Gabbard to resign. Until we start hearing from some of these Republicans on the issue, as long as they're all still marching in MAGA lockstep, or goose step, as it were, this signal stuff is going to continue happening, and they're going to continue flouting the laws with respect to archiving and information storage and information security. When or if we get out of this fascist nightmare, it may be impossible to fully determine all of the malfeasance that has occurred. All right, folks, mark it down. Wednesday, March 26, 2025, is the day that Radical Russ agrees with a policy proposal from Robert Fuckwit Kennedy Jr. Yes, I know, hard to believe that I would agree with RFK Jr. on anything, but don't worry, it's not his anti-vax stance. It's not his belief that you need to let kids get infected to build up herd immunity. It's not his trust in cod liver oil to defeat the measles. No, none of that stuff. But you know, even a stopped clock is right twice a day. And in this case, this stopped clock is right on one thing. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., head of Health and Human Services, has floated banning pharmaceutical ads on television. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Ban pharmaceutical ads on television. The United States and New Zealand are the only two countries in the developed world that allow for direct-to-consumer pharmaceutical advertising. And it really, you got to think about why we ever allowed pharmaceutical advertising in the first place. I come from a time back in the day when they wouldn't even allow whiskey advertising on television. You couldn't advertise whiskey. Of course, those days are gone. We still ban cigarette ads in this country. And the thought behind them is because, well, these things are addictive. Last thing they need is more advertising to get people more addicted. Well, when it comes to these pharmaceutical ads, in some cases, we could be dealing with addiction potential with, you know, OxyContin or something. But really, I think the shocking thing about pharmaceutical advertising on television is you're not a doctor. I love these ads. They say, well, ask your doctor about Eliquis. Ask your doctor about Farxiga. Ask your doctor about Jardiance. Look, if I'm asking someone for a drug and they're giving it to me, they're not a doctor. They're a dealer. And we need to end this direct pharmaceutical advertising because, for one, it skews our views of the news. When the news organizations, the broadcast networks, are so heavily dependent on that pharmaceutical advertising revenue, it will skew their coverage of the pharmaceutical industry. Don't want to upset the donors. And you're not a doctor, so how would you know that you need this thing? And when you get advertised for this thing, all it does is it sends you to your doctor asking a whole bunch of questions about a drug that he may already know, or she may already know, is not useful to you or counterindicated. Leave the pharmaceutical advertising to the doctors. Let the doctors know what tools are available in their toolkit to treat you. This would be like advertising, you know, wrenches to me when my mechanic is the one that needs the wrench. Let the advertisement go to the people who use those tools. Put them in medical journals. Put them in conferences for physicians. But advertising direct to the people makes no sense, skews our news coverage, creates an even larger revenue industry for pharmaceuticals that don't really need it. They got plenty of money. Ban pharma ads on TV. So there you go. The one time I've agreed with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but hold on. He's not out of the woods yet. Because, again, the silly beliefs of this man, the harmful beliefs of this man who's in charge of our public health are hurting kids. Report coming out of Texas shows that kids are being treated now for liver failure. They're bringing in kids now whose livers are failing. Why? Because their parents are overdosing them with vitamin A. Why? Because Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said, oh, forget about the measles vaccine. You want to fight measles. What you need is vitamin A and cod liver oil. So people believed him and started pumping their kids full of vitamin A, and now they're killing their kids' livers. Congrats, kids. Kid, you didn't get the measles, but now you need a transplant. Not the only bad thing happening in Texas. The other thing I caught coming out of Texas was a review of their maternity statistics that's finding that since the overturning of Roe v. Wade, Texas maternal mortality is up 33%. One-third more women are dying in childbirth in Texas because of this ban on abortion-related health care. Sepsis cases, ectopic pregnancies, dangerous miscarriages. All the fallout from religious-based policymaking. The ban on abortion, the overturning of Roe v. Wade by our Catholic Supreme Court, is a religious edict. It has no basis in science, no basis in healthcare, all of its basis in misreading of spiritual texts. Just a little time for a quick note on politics coming out of the state of Pennsylvania. We're looking to read the tea leaves of the electorate following the Trump win in 2024. And as people looked at the county and district results, they saw a redward shift in just about every district and county in the United States. Even in blue cities, blue counties, blue districts, more support for Trump compared to the prior election. The feeling being that the country has shifted right, that people are more right-wing. Well, these results out of Pennsylvania might be showing us the beginnings of a revolt against this right-wing takeover, of people becoming politically aware that what they were promised with Musk and Doge and MAGA is not what they're getting. And we're taking a look in Pennsylvania at a state special election that took place for the Pennsylvania State Senate. And this was happening in central Pennsylvania, Lancaster area, one of the most populated areas of Amish community, right? So very conservative type communities here in central Pennsylvania. A man, a Democrat named James Malone, was running against a guy named Josh Parsons, the Republican. And Parsons had the name recognition in the state, previous elected and pretty well known in the state. This guy, James Malone, an unknown running against him. And the district is a Trump plus 17 district. Went for Trump by 17 points. So deep red district. And the numbers coming out of this election are showing that James Malone has won that election by 482 votes over Josh Parsons. 482 votes, and his campaign, James Malone's campaign, ran primarily on being anti-Musk, anti-Elon Musk. And this is something I was talking about the other day, about how Trump's choice of kind of letting Musk be the acting president while Trump golfs is going to backfire, going to blow up in his face, because while Trump has that magical charisma that the MAGA can't get enough of, Musk does not. People think of Musk as a weirdo. And that dislike seems to have carried over into this Pennsylvania State Senate race. James Malone winning by 482 votes. And the kicker, this is the part I find especially sublime, is there was a third party running. A libertarian named Zachary Moore, who got 480 votes. So the Republican loses by 482 votes, and there were 480 more votes to get that went to the Libertarian. It's just kind of nice from my perspective as a lefty to see someone on the right being sandbagged by third party voters for once. Time for our regular Boycott Idaho segment, why you should avoid the handmade state, and most particularly, avoid the Idaho potato. No red state is more directly associated with one product than Idaho and the potato. They even brag about it on their license plates. So let's make an example of the handmade state. We're going to pick one red state and make it hurt economically to show the rest of them. You need to start treating your people better, or those of us in the blue states aren't going to support you economically. Now, the story coming out of Idaho that gathered national and international attention is the story of Sarah Enama, the West Ada sixth grade teacher, who refused to take down the sign that says everyone is welcome and has the multiracial hands. On Monday, they had the Everyone is Welcome Day. And the latest update from this is that now over 20,000 of those t-shirts have gone out for the Everyone is Welcome, and they've gotten people buying them from as far away as New Zealand. They've had members of the TV show General Hospital and the Grammy winning hip hop group Arrested Development have also gotten a hold. I love Arrested Development. Mr. Wendell, that's a great tune. And at Tennessee. Anyway, hip hop's Arrested Development wearing the shirt, getting tons of news. On Sunday, they had a chalking event. They chalked the sidewalks in front of the West Ada School District with Everyone is Welcome messages. Those got power washed off on Monday morning. Great video of that as well. So good news coming out of Idaho, where the people there are rejecting this idea that saying everyone is welcome, everyone of every race is welcome, is not a political statement. And to be opposed to that statement is to be racist. The fear from the administration was that it would go against the law that was signed by Brad Little on Thursday. This was House Bill 41. And the new law bans flags or banners that present political, religious, or ideological views, including but not limited to political parties, race, gender, sexual orientation, or political ideologies. Now, the law doesn't take effect until July 1st, so that is part of why they've given her till the end of the school term, because really they don't have a law to fall back on here for as an excuse to ban the sign. They can only ban it on what they call the political climate. And the political climate is this. It goes back to what I played in that clip of Pete Hegseth at the beginning of the show. We're going to be merit-based and colorblind. In their view, discussing race, acknowledging that race exists, is racist. They want to play that old, you know, what you hear from well-meaning white folks sometimes. Oh, I love everyone equally. I don't see color. You don't see color? What the hell? Are you Stevie Wonder? Everybody's got color. And that color matters. It matters. There's social impacts to that color. And it's important to recognize our diversity and that we are different. The anti-DEI purge that's coming out of the state of Idaho and happening nationally is to eliminate the discussion of race, gender, sexual orientation, is to pretend that there are no differences, to ignore those differences, to paper them over. That's what they're trying to do with this. And that's why their reaction when they said, oh, the message is okay, everyone is welcome, it was the different colored hands that were the problem. Because in their view, once you put up the different colored hands, You're recognizing that we have different races, and that's not what we're going to do anymore. We're not going to recognize different races, different genders, different sexual orientations. We're all going to pretend that everyone is some monolithic, same human, and treat them all in a merit-based way. Okay, you want to do that? You want to really do things in a merit-based way? Then explain to me how, in a very famous study, they took resumes, took a resume, and they put a white guy's name on the top of it, John Smith. And then they take the same exact resume, but the same qualifications, the same education, the same experience, literally word for word, letter for letter, the same resume, but put a black guy's name on the top, like Jamal Washington. John Smith will get twice the callbacks. You send that resume out to hundreds of employers, John Smith, Jamal Washington, John Smith's going to get twice the callbacks. Well, gosh, if we're doing everything in a merit-based way, you would think both those resumes with the same merits on them would get the same amount of calls, wouldn't they? So you want to go merit-based? Then completely eliminate any recognition of race. Don't put the guy's name on the resume and let's see what happens. Reminds me of the Cleveland Symphony. The story I heard about the Cleveland Symphony. For years, there's been lamentation about the fact that women were underrepresented in major symphony orchestras, despite the fact that there's about the same number of women musicians. So, the director of the symphony, as the story was told, held auditions behind a curtain and instructed the musicians to take their shoes off before they walked on the stage so you couldn't hear high heels or sneakers or dress shoes, whatever, right? So the judges would be on the other side of the curtain and the violinist or cellist or bassoonist behind the curtain would play the audition. And then based on just hearing the musicians, not seeing them, not having any clue as to their race or gender, the Cleveland Symphony ended up being one of the most diverse orchestras in America, with far more women in that orchestra. So there's your example of merit-based. It can be done, but not by erasing all discussion of race and gender, just in the circumstances when you're trying to judge merit. Would it make any sense? Now, another Idaho update I have for you is the visit of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who just the last couple days has visited Idaho and Montana, trying to raise state-by-state support for a constitutional amendment to the U.S. Constitution for a balanced budget. And this is something the right-wingers bring around from time to time. Let's have a balanced budget amendment. And DeSantis sells it by saying, you know, states like Florida and Idaho, our constitutions say you have to have a balanced budget. Why shouldn't our federal constitution have to have a balanced budget? Well, there's lots of reasons why a balanced budget that might work for a state doesn't work for a country. And first of all, is a country has to deal with economic crises. If you have a balanced budget amendment in the Constitution, it reduces the federal government's ability to raise debt in the case of an economic emergency. Sometimes we need to have a deficit to stimulate the economy. Sometimes we need to have tax cuts. Sometimes we need to have increased spending. If you have a balanced budget amendment, it ties the hands of Congress from being able to do such things. And with their hands tied, that could lead to drastic spending cuts. As if we're not having them already. But in order to balance the budget, you'd have to start making cuts to social services and education and healthcare. Or if you weren't bringing in enough revenue to balance your budget, you'd have to increase taxes. Have to do all sorts of tax increases to make the budget balance. It would limit your ability to spend on infrastructure and investment because of these long-term 10, 15, 20-year projects. Hard to tell if in year three there's some sort of massive recession and now you can't make the payments on your infrastructure investments. We need to be able to finance and leverage debt to be able to make these long-term investments. There's all sorts of unintended consequences that could happen here as the federal government has to make these cuts to make budgets balance. The states have to take up the slack. And a lot of those states, like Idaho, Florida, that have balanced budgets may not be able to do so easily. It could undermine our monetary policy, the ability to set interest rates to stimulate the economy because it might affect the balanced budget. And God forbid there's a national emergency or we're plunged into war, because a balanced budget amendment would severely limit your ability to run the large deficits needed to finance emergencies or wartime. What this is really about, a balanced budget amendment, is to give Republicans more tools to cut government. And this reminds me also, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, Rick Wilson and Mark Cuban were discussing the federal government. And the annoying thing to me was the entire basis of their discussion was the assumption that we need to shrink government. We need to reduce government. We need to shrink government spending. Government is too big. We've got to shrink government. Who says? Who says how big the government is supposed to be? I don't have a specific size in mind for how big a government is supposed to be. I think a government, in our case, should be big enough to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. However big the government needs to be to do that is how big it should be. As you look at the Trump maladministration and the terrible moves they're making, the unpopular cuts to Social Security that are on the horizon, the ridiculous lack of concern for the needs of the people, it makes you wonder if they're even concerned about the next election. Because the way they're acting, they don't seem too worried about upsetting the voters. Seems almost like the fix is in, doesn't it? I know, we're supposed to believe that we have free and fair elections and they can't be hacked. But I'm telling you, it seems a little odd that on election day, we had a number of major Democratic polling places get bomb threats called in from Russia that required them to completely evacuate the building for minutes. Minutes during which who knows what could have been plugged into servers, routers, etc. I give Elon Musk a lot of crap, but when it comes to tech stuff and computers, he and his minions are some of the best on the planet at it. If anyone could hack our U.S. election system, it would be someone like Elon Musk. So I'm worried. I'm worried that they don't think that there is a problem. They've got it all under control. However, there are some moves that temper my worry a little bit, and that is how hard they're still trying to prevent us to vote. If they had this in the bag, if it were all hacked and ready to go, why would they be still trying so hard to repress the vote? The latest voter repression comes in the form of a Trump executive order that was issued that requires citizenship proof on your federal registration form. So understand, you can register to vote at the state level, of course. But in order to try to assist voting, we came up with a few years ago a federal registration form that then gets forwarded on to your appropriate state and so forth. On this federal form, Trump wants to make it so that you have to supply proof of citizenship, like a passport, birth certificate, or other documentation. And in many cases, this sort of documentation is not readily available to people. In other cases, women specifically have changed their name from their original birth certificate documentation. It can make it harder to prove. This is just one of the things in the executive order that, again, is immediately being sued by the ACLU and is most likely not going to hold up in court. But it does show you where these guys' heads are at when it comes to people voting. Another part of the executive order says that any state that accepts ballots after Election Day, like California does, these would be the ballots that were postmarked in time, like you got the mail postmarked on Election Day or before Election Day, but the delays in the mail, thanks to people like Postmaster General DeJoy, the delays in the mail made it so it didn't arrive until after Election Day. Trump wants those to not count. You got your vote in on time. It was postmarked in time, but it just wasn't received in time. Trump wants to disenfranchise you for that. So it's not enough for you to vote early enough. You have to vote early enough to make sure that you've accounted for the post office, that he's wrecked. And the other part of this executive order that's troublesome is it gives DOGE, Elon Musk's merry band of incels, it gives DOGE access to federal voting databases and state voter registration lists. Oh my gosh, what in the world would he want to do with that? Well, supposedly it's to root out the fraud of the illegal aliens that are voting. Yeah, that's the Trump belief since 2020. He has believed he has lost the election. He lost that election because Democrats let immigrants in through open borders. And then these illegal immigrants who don't have Social Security numbers or any sort of way to register to vote are somehow registering to vote and voting against him. That's the theory. When actual election integrity experts take a look at this stuff, they find that real voter fraud is exceptionally rare, like the one in a million type of thing. And when the actual voter fraud happens, a lot of them tend to be Republicans that voted twice. You voted here and voted there. Now, election fraud, that's a whole different thing. The election officials defrauding us, that's a different thing. But people, individuals trying to vote when they're not allowed to vote, so rare that we can say it hardly ever happens. And that's why he wants to disenfranchise the ballots that come in after Election Day and let DOGE root around in our voter records. This is just one attack on our voting franchise. The other one is an act they're trying to get passed through Congress called the SAVE Act. The SAVE Act, something about voting, right? SAVE Act. This act is to provide, again, that you have to show proof of citizenship. If this act is passed and we come around to the 2026 election, there is a possible 70% of women voters who would be affected by this for having taken a married name that doesn't match their original birth certificate. So the fact that they're still trying to disenfranchise us so hard makes me think perhaps they don't have this as hacked as some of us think they do.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
All right, that's all the time we've got for the podcast today. And do me a favor, pass this on to a friend or a relative. Let them know that the Radical Rush Show is available every morning if you just want to listen to some Gen X white stoner guy rambling about politics. This is the podcast for you. The Radical Rush Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalruss@gmail.com, call my message line at 877-RUSS-420, That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as RadicalRuss.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.